What Women Must Know. This is a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters, but men are also welcome because so many of the topics we talk about directly impact men's health as well. So today is another show that's really important for women and for men. I'd like to welcome you. I'm your host, Dr. Cheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, author. I have another radio show on this very network every Sunday called the Women's Healing Circle. And I'm a very passionate advocate for women's holistic health solutions. So it's a joy having you join me today for another exploration and in-depth conversation into subjects that women really must know. I want to be sure that everyone is invited to go up to my website, which is whatwomenmustknow.com. If you opt in there, you will get many of my special reports. I have done some very important in-depth information, educational reports. You can go to my articles page. I have many of my published articles freely available for you there. Also, if you go to my homepage, all of the radio shows are archived and accessed right there from my homepage. So it's a great way to keep up with all the important information that we really must know. You know, for me, the opportunity to do the show, to learn as a naturopathic doctor, we are always learning anyway, has had profound ramifications for my own personal health. We never stop learning, and I just want everyone to really understand that there are solutions for every health problem we may be facing. And when I mean solutions, what I'm talking about is the ability to support the body to heal and repair and regenerate, not just about suppressing symptoms, which is never healing the body. We really want to do everything possible physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually to support the body's phenomenal ability to heal and repair and regenerate. And that is part of the topic we're going to be talking about today. One of the conditions that is posing great health challenge to so many people more than ever before has to do with a condition, a group of conditions under the name of autoimmune diseases. You may have heard of that term before. Things such as Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which I am intimately familiar with because I was diagnosed, maybe it's about 10 years ago now or a little bit more even, with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. I really didn't even know what that was at the time, but it is an autoimmune disease affecting the functioning of the thyroid, leading to hypothyroid-like conditions. And since it is an autoimmune disease, potentially can be quite serious and can even lead to having the thyroid removed if it's not addressed properly. Well, anyway, I got really into gear with this whole area of autoimmune diseases, and I was able to heal it. I didn't need to be on thyroid medications. My thyroid is now working perfectly, and as I addressed the autoimmune disease of the thyroid, which really was the condition that got my attention, I also healed and resolved chronic hay fever. I had psoriasis. And I also was getting arthritis, all of which are autoimmune conditions. So this is such an important topic. It is affecting so many more people. There are more and more autoimmune conditions being named, and people are manifesting more autoimmune conditions than ever before. So we really need to understand what's going on because autoimmune diseases are really conditions that are pointing to some serious underlying imbalances occurring in our body. And it's not just about treating an autoimmune disease with a in my case, a thyroid medication, which is what happens with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, or steroids. We want to heal the body. So today we're going to be talking all about autoimmune diseases, and my guest is one of the most knowledgeable people, I would say anywhere in the world today, who is addressing these conditions. We're really very fortunate to have one of my favorite guests, Dr. James Wilson, who is a chiropractor by training, naturopath, a PhD. He has helped thousands of people experiencing all sorts of conditions, particularly adrenal fatigue, and we're going to tie that in with this topic. And for the past 10 years, he has lectured extensively to physicians and is acknowledged as an expert on endocrine imbalances and their impact on health, including the effects of stress on adrenal function. He is the person who presented adrenal fatigue as a distinct diagnosable syndrome. So Dr. Wilson's finally being acknowledged, as even the medical profession now is beginning to acknowledge the reality of adrenal fatigue. And as a scientist as well as a physician, Dr. Wilson holds 3 doctorate degrees and 2 master's degrees from different health disciplines. He was one of the founding fathers of the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine in Toronto, Ontario, and is listed in the International Who's Who in Medicine. He is internationally renowned as an author for his book, Adrenal Fatigue, the 21st Century Stress Syndrome. And this is a comprehensive, easy-to-use guide to uncovering, dealing, and preventing adrenal fatigue and the negative effects of stress on health. And it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Wilson with us today, because we're going to be giving you some profound insight into what is going on in the world of autoimmune disease and, more importantly, what we need to do to heal it. So, Dr. Wilson, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show as always.
Well, thank you, Dr. Selman. It's a pleasure to be here again.
You know, I really enjoy having you every time you appear. I know you've been on the show several times now, because you just have an ability to explain what's going on with conditions that people just find so confusing or just cannot get truthful information about. And certainly when we've discussed previously the whole condition of adrenal fatigue, which is one of my favorite topics, as you know, it's just so enlightening to hear you talk about this. So I know you're really interested in the area of autoimmune diseases, and of course they are all tied together, aren't they?
Well, there are at least some associations. There's some really good associations. We know, you know, there are about 80 different autoimmune disorders, and it's been a fairly recent upticking of these different autoimmune disorders. In other words, 50 years ago, there were very, very few autoimmune disorders that were recognized. And part of this is because autoimmune disorders had to be certain advances in immunology before we were even able to classify autoimmune diseases. For example, we had type 1 diabetes, childhood diabetes, as being a separate disease from, for example, rheumatoid arthritis. But rheumatoid arthritis and autoimmunity as an autoimmune disease and type 1 diabetes as an autoimmune function are both known to be true now. So that what looked to be very different illnesses, childhood diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis, ended up having a similar cause in the sense, and so the early belief was that the immune system was attacking the body. And this is actually something that's still held by medicine, even though the research is showing that's probably not true in a more real sense. But it looks as if, because we do have immune parts that seem to be attacking other parts of the body. But it looks like there's for good reason. There's some of the most recent evidence is that we may have factors such as bacteria or other pathogens that may have escaped and lodged in those cells, and that the body may be attacking those cells, or that the receptor sites on some bacteria look very much like receptor sites on certain kinds of cells. This seems to be happening more at the rheumatoid arthritis level. And so the body's trying to rid the body of those pathogenic microorganisms, but instead is attacking the cells of the body in the mistaken identity. So in some cases, the pathogen goes inside the cell and the body's trying to attack it, but it can't quite get to it. And in other cases, it looks similar to the enemy, and so an attack, trying to attack the enemy, it really attacks its friend. Friendly fire, if you might say. And we're not just talking about a rare illness. We've got 14 to 22 million Americans that are suffering from an autoimmune disease. Now we have about 300 million people in the United States, so you can see that that's about 2-3% of the American population, and that's certainly important. And more importantly, they're responsible for a significant portion of the morbidity, that means the disability, and the mortality, in other words, death, of health care expenses. So these people have a disproportionate medical bill, so to say, because taken as a group, this group of 80 autoimmune diseases are the third leading cause of morbidity and mortality in the industrialized world. As a matter of fact, it's the cost of it and the death of it is and the disease part, the disability part, is only surpassed by cancer and heart disease. And if you don't believe me, you can look up an article by Notkins, N-O-T-K-I-N-S, in the periodical called Autoimmunity. And this was in 2004. It was in 2004. And he's talking about this. So it's not just my idea. These are researchers that are confirming this to us. So as a whole, they represent a leading cause of death among young to middle-aged women in the United States today. And that was shown by Walsh and Rao in their famous article in the American Journal of Public Health. So we can see that we're looking at a very, very important problem. But the unfortunate thing is, what's going on mainly now with the treatment is that they're simply trying to sequester the symptoms and help them feel a little bit better, not try to really get them over anything like happened in your case. In other words, not getting down to the root of it. Why are these people getting this? What's the base cause? What's the root cause? And that may be some of the things we can talk about today if we have time. But I want you to know it's a very important thing. It's high on the agenda of a lot of researchers, and it seems to be a puzzlement to most doctors, so they throw steroids at it. And they do other things, you know, give them gold treatment, methotrexate, other things like that. And what it does is cause a lot of side reactions. The women and the men have problems. Now, overall, more women suffer from autoimmune illnesses than men. And it depends on the disease, but between a 2-to-1 to 9-to-1 preference for women for the particular disease, with the exception of one disease called ankylosing spondylitis, it preferentially affects men. But in most all the other autoimmune illnesses, women are the ones that are most affected.
Isn't that intriguing? Do you have any theories on why that is?
Oh, I do. I do. And at first, I was off thinking, oh, well, that's obvious. It's due to the excess estrogen. You know, estrogen can be pro-inflammatory, and we know that we have, as soon as we add estrogen to the mix, we get pro-inflammatory events. Well, that ends up being only a small part of the story. It looks like it's more likely the lower DHEAS and testosterone that ends up being the culprit. As a matter of fact, I don't know whether you've discussed TH1, TH2 type of illnesses on your program as far as immunity goes?
No, we have not, no.
Okay, there's different parts of the immune system that respond to different hormones. And the one that responds, there's the kind that shoots out antibodies, and those are secreted by a group called B lymphocytes, and they fall into a class, we'll call them T2 helper cells. So these are responsible for antibodies, and everybody's familiar with antibodies floating around, look like little Ys in the bloodstream. They physically look like little Ys, and they have to attach to the enemy, and then they send out signals calling in the rest of the immune system to attack. And then there's another part of the immune system that goes hand-to-hand combat with these pathogens, with the enemy. And that's a different part of the immune system. We call that the TH1 or the T-helper 1. It's also called cellular immunity. And it just seemed, and the research has shown, that when there's more testosterone and DHEA circulating, there's a tendency toward a Th1 response, which means that the cells, you know, the immune system, will more directly attack the pathogen and get them under control and take care of them. Whereas if it's more of a Th2 response that secretes the antibodies, it only disables and doesn't always kill them. So it means that if we take two animals, one group of females and one males, and we expose them to the same autoimmune mechanism, the same autoimmune pathogen, that the males don't have the autoimmune predilection that the females do, and it looks like it's primarily driven by the testosterone and DHEA that they have. And then you have some research that shows later on that DHEA and testosterone given to autoimmune people seem like it helps in sequestering the autoimmunity. It's one of the factors that seems beneficial. So there we have sex differences. But, you know, more importantly, we can't change our sex. Well, some people can, but most people don't change their sex. And so we can do things besides supplementation that help, because if we look at further research, we can see that if we take cells of blood cells and we analyze them, we find that people were already having problems before they developed the autoimmunity. Now, we know that genetics in most diseases plays about a 10 to 15% role. And this is the same as it is in other diseases, about a 10 to 15% role. The rest of it is environment. And so it looks like what we need for an autoimmune disease to take place is a genetic predisposition. That's going to be a part of it, small part of it, but a part of it. And then we have some sort of internal environmental conditions, which ends up being very important, and then some sort of environmental trigger. So the environmental trigger in this case is probably some sort of pathogen, even though there are probably a number of different pathogens associated with it. And then we have the internal environment. Now, that's where it gets really interesting, because when we've done the blood work of people retrospectively, in other words, people that had developed an autoimmune disease, and we have previous blood already stored for those people, what we found is those women, predominantly women, had already had lower cortisol levels, and cortisol is the greatest anti-inflammatory in the body, secreted by the adrenal glands, lower DHEA levels, and DHEAS levels, and DHEAS is, again, only secreted by the adrenal glands, lower testosterone levels. We also know that there's things about their diet. They had a diet that's primarily high in red meats, high in trans fatty acids, high in hydrogenated fats, low in vegetables, low in fruits, and low overall nutrition. So they had lower vitamin E, vitamin A, vitamin E, and vitamin C. So there's a number of pre-existing conditions that women were in this before they developed the autoimmunity. In other words, the internal environment had set them for autoimmune development. Now, there are some very astute researchers that said, what happens if we take these people and we treat them very early with some nice anti-inflammatories like aspirin, for example? If we get them in the very, very beginning, when they're just showing only one test positive, it's called an anti-nuclear antibody test, ANA, and they don't show any signs of autoimmunity, we know that in 3 to 5 years, they're going to develop some sort of autoimmunity. But it's just not manifest yet. So what would happen if we gave them 350 to 650 milligrams of aspirin, the equivalent of about a baby aspirin to a full aspirin a day? Well, it's interesting. A significant portion of those women never went on to develop an autoimmune illness, because once they had the anti-inflammatory aspect, the immune system was able to then overcome the problem, and the person would be normal then. Not I wouldn't say normal. Didn't go on to develop the autoimmune disease. So you see, there's all kinds of factors that people can do to help themselves, and among them, we'll talk about this in detail later. But stress, decreasing their stress, because stress is one of the greatest enhancers of autoimmune illness.
You know, I think that's, you know, I mean, I love what we're doing. We're peeling the onion, right? We're taking off the layers.
Yeah.
Because from a holistic, naturopathic, integrative medicine point of view, every condition is really a result of underlying imbalances. So our interest is addressing all of those components so the body can heal, as opposed to putting somebody on steroids or, you know, methotrexate. I mean, that's a chemotherapy drug. Why do you want to do that? That's not going to heal the body. And the important message, first of all, that I think is critical is that these conditions can be healed. That possibility is very real if people are committed to healing their body. And I go back to my situation again. When I was diagnosed, I probably had Hashimoto's thyroiditis for many years before it was diagnosed. I think I've had tendencies to, you know, autoimmune inflammatory conditions, and the thyroid was, you know, obviously not functioning for many years, and, you know, the weight issues and depression and all sorts of symptoms. What was so critical for me in my journey of healing this was, first of all, I learned about the connection between gluten sensitivity and a greater risk of autoimmune diseases, like particularly thyroid. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure, because as people are sensitive to foods or whatever, it creates an overall pro-inflammatory event, that the immune system gets hyped. It's a little bit like you're having a bad day. And what made you have a bad day is you start off arguing with your husband, we'll say. And so then you get to work, and someone makes some comment that normally would be neutral for you, and you snap back at them. You normally wouldn't do that. And someone else says something, and you get in their face about this. Well, that's not really what you usually do, but because you're already set up, you just kind of jump on them. Same thing happens with the immune system. And when you're in a pro-inflammatory state, see, it takes an immune response to create this inflammation that's happening in most cases. And so you eat something like wheat, and that creates an intestinal upset that creates the inflammation. And, you know, about half your immune system is within 2 inches of your digestive system, because the digestive system is a great portal for other things to enter that might hurt you. So the immune system starts responding there. It sends out signals to the whole other part of the immune system. And then anything else that's going to happen, you're going to be hyper-responsive to. So then you're going to be more likely to respond to other foods. You're going to be more likely to respond to other pathogens. And you're going to be more likely to attack your own cells.
And is that condition persists and continues and just gets more chronic over the years, then it, you know, these things that are going on under the surface subclinically start to manifest as, you know, full-blown conditions.
Absolutely. So we have someone that has an occasional bad day that goes on to have mostly bad days to go on to be a confirmed grouch and real, oh, that person has an attitude problem. Stay away from them. We got the same thing. We got the immune system that's been tuned, and they eventually become so hypervigilant that anything you do, they're going to respond to it, over-respond to it. And so the person pays in spades for a small transgression.
You know, the next piece for my puzzle was, so I learned that there was a connection because I was gluten sensitive and I was eating a lot of gluten containing grains, you know, wheat, rye, barley, oats, spelt. So I gave them up. I also learned that there's one molecule difference or so between gluten and the lactose in sugars, I mean, in milk products. So I gave up milk, dairy products. And then I learned that this was part of chronic inflammation going on in my intestinal tract, as you mentioned. And I had to pay attention and do specific supplements to support the healing of this inflamed lining in my intestinal tract. So can you take that piece of it? Because this is so interesting as we're unraveling this. Is this true? Do you find this is true for most people who are dealing with autoimmune conditions, whatever they may be? They have a component that has to do with inflammation in their digestive tract?
All the time. all the time. It's one of the most pervasive things that I see, and I see that it's as a matter of fact, it's my belief that this is how it got started in the first place, because there was probably already some sort of inflammation in there that then allowed the pathogen to escape through the intestinal wall due to leaky gut syndrome. So in other words, the holes were too big in the intestinal tract that allowed the migration of that pathogen that found its way into those cells or to in sufficient numbers, so the body became attacking that and also started attacking the other cells. So I mean, I think most of it started in the intestinal tract, and had there not been the inflammation in the first place, then they probably would have had an intact gut that would not have allowed that to have happened, and the person wouldn't have developed the autoimmunity in the first place. So I absolutely, there's always an intestinal component with it. Now, we'll get other things, too, that will have those pathogens that will reside in the intestinal tract for years, such as candida or yersinia or other things like that. Now, they'll be in there for years, and they'll continually stir the pot and keep the immune system overactive if they reach too much abundance in the digestive system. So we've got an ongoing problem sometimes that we have to take care of before that person starts to heal. As a matter of fact, anytime anyone came in to me when I had my active practice, anytime anyone came in with me with an autoimmune problem, first thing I would look at is their intestinal tract. I'd look at what foods bother them. I'd do a complete digestive stool analysis, so I'd see if they were digesting their foods, what kind of inflammatory markers they had in there. I'd look at their secretory IgA, which is a part of the special part of the immune system that works with the mucous membranes that tells when they're inflamed and agitated. And we'd look at this. Sometimes they'd have to clean the colon and sometimes have to clean the small intestine, large intestines first. Sometimes we'd have to kill those bugs inside, the unwanted bugs inside their intestinal tract. But we always started with their diet and with their intestinal tract to get things under control for them.
You know, the what you were talking about, the secretory IgA, the indicator of whether there's inflammation in the digestive tract, with mucous membranes of the digestive tract. You know, of course, I use saliva testing to assess hormones, adrenals. In fact, I think adrenals in some cases are more important to know about than hormones, since they will impact hormones. But I have not found one person. Not one person yet in the, you know, thousands of people I've done, not one person who didn't have compromised secretory IgA.
I know. Well,
not one person. So what we're saying is that every single person that I have as a patient, unbeknownst to them, because it's usually subclinical, we only see consequences. We don't really even understand what it is. And, of course, medical doctors don't even address this. But every single person shown by the test is dealing with chronic inflammation of the gut that modulates their immune system, their first line of immune defense in their gut.
Absolutely. And I would say, too, Dr. Selman, that just because first-line medicine isn't addressing it doesn't mean medical research isn't addressing it. There are hundreds of articles about what we're talking about in the medical literature. Mm-hmm. It's not that the medical research isn't there for the doctors to hang their hat on. It's just that for some reason, only naturopathic physicians and the medical doctors who are on the front line of research are doing this. If they go to some of the advanced courses that I've been lucky enough to teach and be exposed to, they get this, but it's not for the usual doctor. So I just want to make the point, just because they're not using it doesn't mean the research isn't there. It's there, and it's being done in credible universities. It's being published in top-notch journals. The what you were talking about the secretory IgA, what I was talking about with the inflammatory responses and the effect of food allergy on the immune system and setting up the internal environment for autoimmunity, that's all in the literature, well established in the medical literature. And I say that because sometimes the people go, well, you know, you're a naturopath, you're way out there, you know, you're one of those woo-woo doctors. No, we're talking about using science here. We're talking about applying what we already know.
Right, we're not just making up these theories. You know, we need to take a break, Dr. Wilson, so please stay with us. And everyone listening, do not go away, because this is a show you need to hear. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. We will be right back.
PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
Want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
Incisive analysis on the state of our planet from a black left perspective, join me, Glenn Ford, and my colleague, Nellie Bailey, at Black Agenda Radio, right here on the Progressive Radio Network. We bring you the full scope of reality as we and our interlocutors see it every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Black Agenda Radio, the place to get oriented to the black left worldview on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Adam Coulter with Brooklyn Jazz Underground Radio. We'll be here every Tuesday from 5 to 6 with great music, interviews, and live performances. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. Again, that's Tuesdays from 5 to 6, or you can listen anytime at the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
Rachel Trachtenberg for Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination. This is a show for everyone from our perspective as teens. Current events, art is life, music, and politics. Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination
with co-host Julia Cunning.
Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Not bad.
Not too shabby.
Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for all things progressive.
This day marks the beginning of a beautiful friendship, because the stronger my heart gets, the stronger my pen gets.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and we are talking all about autoimmune diseases with my guest today, Dr. James Wilson, who is the author of the best-selling book called Adrenal Fatigue, the 21st Century Stress Syndrome. So this is really helping to unravel. We're really just dissecting the condition known as autoimmune disease and the many variations on that theme. And I was mentioning that I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And as we're talking about these underlying root cause issues, these are the things I had to address that allowed me to heal my Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And I did say heal it. I didn't say just medicate it, heal it. And, you know, we're talking about lupus. We're talking about rheumatoid arthritis. We're talking about eczema, psoriasis. Can you mention, roll off some of the long list of conditions of the 80 or so that are now being defined as autoimmune disease? What are the most common ones?
Lupus erythematosus, scleroderma, Sjögren syndrome, Reiter syndrome, rheumatoid arthritis, chronic thyroiditis, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, thyroid storm. Let's just see. There's so many. Irritable bowel syndrome.
Would you put allergies in it? Would you put, you know, like hay fever?
I wouldn't, but I can tell you that they seem like they're predisposing factors.
Mm-hmm.
So because you already have the pro-inflamed situation. So
similar things are going on, but they're not as chronic. Would it be the difference between a hay fever, seasonal hay fever, as opposed to more colitis, irritable bowel, things like that?
It's probably because they haven't gotten in touch with something in the environment, whether it's a chemical, whether it's a pathogen or something that triggers that autoimmune response. That specific autoimmune response. And so they're never going to... One of the difficulties is that medicine likes to have an absolute on answers as far as causes of disease. And it's most likely that autoimmune... The evidence points heavily toward autoimmune diseases having many origins. In some cases, it's going to be petrochemicals. In some, it's going to be estrogenic xenoestrogens in the pesticides and herbicides. In other women, it's going to be a pathogen, and of those, chlamydia and yersinia are two of the most common ones that end up being a part of the pathogenic problem. And so we've got many things that can be bombarded. And I was thinking, one thing I don't want to do is get away before we talk about the different things people can do to help themselves, because it seems like it's overwhelming. They feel like, well, at any point, if I'm already having some sort of reactions or my anti-nuclear antibody test has been positive and my doctor says, oh, well, don't worry about it right now because you don't have an illness. Well, we know in 3 to 5 years, we know that most of those people that are ANA positive are going to develop some sort of autoimmune illness. So there are things that they can do. There are a lot of things they can do that will help. And one of the first things they need to do is go right back what we're talking about and look at their intestinal tract, look at their dietary intake, look at signs and symptoms they might have of digestive disturbances, look at the thyroid, look at the adrenals, making sure they're well-balanced, look at their sex hormones and make sure they're well-balanced. So there's lots of things that the people can do so that in many cases the autoimmunity never manifests.
So the first message, I think the number one thing people need to hear who have been diagnosed with some sort of autoimmune disease, and we have to say that the most common, when it comes to thyroid issues, the most common condition is an autoimmune.
It looks like it's running between 25% and 40% of the population, depending on what expert you ask. But certainly, it's among those. It's important enough to be looked at with a lot of with a lot of seriousness. So it doesn't matter. You see, the problem is if you've got the disease, it doesn't matter whether it's a rare one or a common one. You've got to deal with it. And we know there's enough people with autoimmune thyroiditis that we need to deal with it. That's for sure. It's certainly a prevalent disease. And who cares whether it's in first or second or third place?
Right.
It's something we have to deal with because it's a common thing.
And the other thing that I think is so important to emphasize to people listening, that it is possible to heal Hashimoto's thyroiditis, lupus. I know people who've healed rheumatoid arthritis, scleroderma. I mean, all these conditions, the possibility is there, especially if they have not progressed to become so chronic that and systems have so damaged it, which still may be able to be healed. This may take time. And I think that's such an important message for people to hear, that possibility, that very real possibility exists if people are ready and committed to making changes and working with practitioners that really understand that possibility exists.
And you hit a real key there, Dr. Selman, working with a practitioner who really understands. Because in most cases, this is, even though the individual can make great strides with themselves, working with an informed physician can put you light years ahead on your therapies. And so search for a doctor who understands and knows. And the interesting thing is, in most cases, this isn't an immunologist or someone's a specialist. It's someone who's been trained in alternative medicine, because they're the ones likely to take the comprehensive approach and help you do the things in your life that will help you decrease and then not react and then reverse your illness. Now, there's lots of things you can do on your own. We can talk about that. But in my opinion, you're better off working with an informed physician to help yourself get over this. You probably, well, I don't know, you may disagree about that.
Oh, no, I agree. I don't think anyone on their own, I don't think a lay person understands all the missing pieces of this puzzle.
Yeah.
And you need, right? So we need the guidance of a, and sometimes it's a team, I like to call it getting your healing team, whether it's a naturopath or integrative physician or a chiropractor or acupuncturist, whoever your team may be, even people who deal with psychological, emotional components, you've got to get your team together. And I do want us to talk about some practical steps people can take. I just want to, have you talk a little bit more about some of the other components, and then we can look at some of the solutions. Because one of the components, it was certainly a major component for me, talking about the role of chronic and subclinical inflammation, the compromised functioning of the gut, the inflammation that was going in my gut due to, who knows what, stress and gluten and chemicals, environmental toxins, whatever was going on, history of antibiotics in my past. And all of that had impacted my adrenal glands, which I was diagnosed with really exhausted adrenal glands. And maybe you can just, explain that piece of this puzzle.
Sure. Let's go back, and we mentioned something before. You remember that we're talking about a genetic predisposition of 10 to 15, maybe even as high as 30% on these autoimmune diseases. So in other words, even though it's a factor, it's not as important as the internal environment that's going on. What's going on inside that person, the internal environment that they have? Well, one of those most important things in the internal environment is the anti-inflammatory. We talked about the pro-inflammatory parts of allergies and intestinal irritations and other things. But the greatest pro-inflammatory hormone circulating in your body is cortisol. And so cortisol is a very important anti-inflammatory, plus all the other things it does, so that when someone starts to react, if there's adequate cortisol, it simply keeps that from reacting nearly to the degree that it normally would. And of course, if it doesn't react very much, then you don't have near the probability of going on this inflammatory cascade where you start reacting to this, and then this, and then this, and then this, and you get a high state of pro-inflammatory states in your body, reactions in your body that eventually set the conditions for the autoimmunity. So cortisol in itself is a very important thing to do, to look at. Now, we also want to look at, as I said earlier, we want to look at the DHEAS and the testosterone, and we want to look at the ratios of progesterone and estrogen, because progesterone actually acts like a TH1. It acts somewhat like an anti-inflammatory in relationship with estrogen. So looking at the female hormone balance is a very important aspect of autoimmunity too. So the adrenals end up being very, very key to this, because testosterone is more secreted out of the adrenals than it is any other place in the woman's body. And DHEAS is secreted mainly by the adrenals, and cortisol secreted mainly by the adrenal glands. So if this person's had a life of stressfulness that's left them feeling kind of tired, where they're tired when they get up in the morning, they have an afternoon low, they tend to be hypoglycemic, they need coffee and cola to keep going. Those are pretty key indicators that their adrenal glands need a lot of attention. And then, of course, we want to look at the thyroid gland, whether or not the thyroid is involved in the autoimmunity or not, because the thyroid makes things happen. It provides energy to the cells, the stimulus, the spark plug that makes sure things turn over fast, and that the immune system has the activity, the reactivity that it needs to. So looking at the thyroid and the adrenal glands closely, and then looking at the immune system and the gut, are real key things that we want to start with.
So important, so fundamental. I just have one question about thyroid. When people go and get their thyroid test done, their blood test done, in your experience, do most doctors test people for thyroid antibodies?
No, as a matter of fact, due to a lot of influence from the insurance company, when someone goes to a doctor and he tests their thyroid gland, he only does one test now. It's called the TSH test. And the TSH is short for thyroid-stimulating hormone, and that's a hormone secreted by the pituitary gland to go down and tell the thyroid to make hormone. So it won't pick up anything about autoimmunity in there, except in rare occasions. So he has the first autoimmune product that shows in the body is called a TPO, thyroperoxidase, and a thyroperoxidase is it's a peroxidation of the thyroid cells, and so that's what he needs to test for to have an earliest indication of autoimmunity in the thyroid. It's called a TPO test, thyroid peroxidase, and it's covered by most insurances. And so, if you don't have insurance, it's well worth it to pay it if you think you have it. So the doctor only does one test, the TSH, and instead he should do, as a screening test for thyroid, a TSH, a free T4, which is the hormone made by the thyroid gland, but it's inactive, a free T3, which is made by the thyroid and goes down to the liver to be activated, and the TPO. So we got four tests that should be done for any basic thyroid screen: the TSH, free T4, free T3, and TPO. But yet most doctors just do the TSH.
I mean, that's so critical, because without those really specific aspects of the thyroid, you don't really know exactly what you're dealing with, why the thyroid isn't responding.
No, absolutely. That's true.
And then you can't treat it. You can't really treat the condition appropriately, you know, because you don't realize, or you don't have the evidence that it's an autoimmune disease. So you're just assuming it's a hypothyroid condition, but not addressing all the key factors that you just mentioned.
I'd say that most early autoimmunity of the thyroid is totally missed by most medical doctors, because they don't do the basic test that tell them anything is wrong. They don't even know some of the signs and symptoms. And so the person simply goes through their office and they're prescribed the wrong medication or given the wrong diagnosis. And so they go on thinking there's nothing wrong with them. And oftentimes it takes them 5 to 8 years to either stumble onto a credible doctor, or they finally figure it out on their own and start searching for a relief. It's a real shame.
Or people who are diagnosed just as a, you know, hypothyroid condition, never really getting it picked up that it's really an autoimmune condition, which is a systemic condition.
Yeah.
And that condition just goes on to become more chronic.
Mm-hmm. And then we know that once you have one autoimmune illness, you're much more likely to develop a second and a third. And so we have many, many people suffering from multiple from autoimmune illnesses of mixed varieties. So in other words, two or three or four autoimmune illnesses going on at the same time.
Oh dear. that's why this show is so important, so we can help people understand what the real issues are, and then they can take action. It's just mind-boggling that, you know, there's so much ignorance out there and so many people suffering because they're not really getting their conditions addressed accurately. You know?
Yeah, but that's why you do what you do, and that's why I do what I do.
Exactly.
Is because part of our job is to make people aware of what power they hold within themselves to have some control over these illnesses. And
yeah.
And so if nothing else, they know better what kind of doctor they're looking for. But hopefully they'll be able to do things that they can do to help themselves. For example, the biggest thing that's going to inflame autoimmune illnesses, two biggest things, is the amount of stress they're under and their diet. If they're into white flour and white sugar, they're going to cause a lot more pro-inflammatory responses. If they're not eating fresh vegetables and fresh fruits, they're going to create more problems. If they're still, hopefully, not doing it, but hopefully they're not eating trans fatty acids or hydrogenated fats. If they're avoiding those are a good indication of helping themselves. Taking vitamins that are high in antioxidants are going to help them. So there's some fundamental things they can do that don't cost very much, that they could at least start laying the groundwork to create a healthier body. And making the body less reactive to their autoimmune illness, making it spread slower or slowing down and even possibly stopping it.
Absolutely.
And then with the help of a good doctor, reversing it.
Absolutely. You know what I wanted to ask you? Do you have any thoughts on the role of vitamin D to help address autoimmune conditions?
Yeah, almost every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you go look at, all you have to do is go to PubMed, Medline, and type in vitamin D, and then and, all capital, A-N-D, capital A, capital N, capital D, autoimmune, or autoimmunity. And you see how many hundred studies come up.
What?
There's lots of them. Because vitamin D acts like a great modulator. And it's very important in autoimmune illnesses. It's a specific treatment. As a matter of fact, I've known doctors that in the first parts of the treatment phase of autoimmunity, they will have their patients take 40 to 50,000 international units of vitamin D for a month or two until the autoimmunity starts to subside, and then they'll cut them down to 10,000, 15,000 international units a day. It's very important.
Because, you know, that's another hormone that people are so deficient in. And and even if you get your vitamin D levels tested, which is getting more popular now, thank goodness, people or doctors, I should say, are letting those numbers slide. I mean, you know, if you are found within normal range, which is quite a big range, it is assumed you're okay. But you know, I mean, I've learned that you really want to be in optimal range. You don't want to be on the low end of normal. You want to be the high end.
That's true. And you had a very interesting description of vitamin D, calling it a hormone, which it actually is. And everybody else would call it a vitamin. I don't know how many of your listeners caught that, but it is indeed, when you look at it, its structure looks very much like a steroid hormone with a cholesterol molecule as the center of it. And it does act more like a hormone than it does as a vitamin in the body. And the research has continually talked about more and higher levels than what they've been recommending. So, and so the tests are not optimal tests, but they're tests to see if you have a frank deficiency. So, you want to have higher levels. Now I'm hearing that the optimals are now around 60, whereas I think the normal now is considered to be above 23 or something.
Well, I'm even encouraging people to go a little higher. I mean, I mean, why not go optimal? Minimum of 60. I'd like to see them a little more than that. But that's interesting that you are aware of practitioners who've prescribed up to 50,000 for a month or so to bring those levels up rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I tell people, it's not just enough to have your vitamin D levels tested. You need to get them tested if you're low. Go on a protocol of increasing your vitamin D, and then you need to test them again to see if you're in optimal range, or else you're still missing the bullseye.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that usually takes 6 months to a year to get your vitamin D levels up to optimal level. So, for sure, every 6 months or so, retest. Now, it's a nice thing. It's a fat-soluble vitamin, so if you miss one day, you can take another day, and it's fine. You're going to be fine to do that. And it is a hormone that you don't want to miss. And, of course, we forgot the obvious, didn't we? Go out in the sun for 20 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Now, I live in Arizona, where we have 330 days of sun a year, and we have a lot of people here with vitamin D deficiencies, even though vitamin D is made by your skin, liver, and kidneys. Vitamin D is deficient in Arizona because people stay out of the sun, whereas in places like Pittsburgh, they hardly have any sun, and so they have vitamin D deficiencies because there's insufficient amount of sun. But the secret is, expose your skin to about 20 minutes of sun, if you can, a day before you put on your suntan lotion. And that way, you'll get the vitamin D.
You know, I just have to share with you one little factoid that I recently learned from a research I was doing in an article. And that is, if people are overweight or obese, they absorb 1/4 of the amount of vitamin D than a person of the normal.
Is that right? So if they're beyond 20% ideal body weight, then they absorb less?
One quarter. So they need 4 times the amount of vitamin D to bring their levels up to normal than if they were of normal weight.
Wow. And then, of course, if they have pigmented skin, they need more exposure, too. So
yes.
If you look at an overweight black person, for example, they might need 8 times as many.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Isn't that interesting? So
yeah.
It's, you know, that's why we need to get it measured, and we need to get a baseline, and then we need to follow up, you know, down the track, so we know what's going on and if we are arriving at optimal levels. And you
mm-hmm.
know, and people think they're doing well with 400 units of vitamin D, and it's like, no, you know. Anything else you want to say? We're just about at the end of our interview. Anything else that is really critical for people to
yeah,
help, to
yeah.
help
make sure you're digesting your food well. In other words, if you're having any difficulty where you're getting feeling like you had a lead balloon or feeling like you get gas or bloating or uncomfortable feelings after you eat within an hour or two, then you're probably not digesting your food very well, and you need to increase your digestion by taking digestive aids. Second of all, make sure your colon, you're having 2 to 3 bowel movements a day, because that's moving things along. Chew your food 30 times a mouthful, and read everything you can about your particular illness, because you're probably going to find the secret before your doctor, unless you can find a well-informed doctor. But find a doctor who really understands natural medicine and autoimmune illnesses, and you, in most every case, you should see dramatic improvement within 3 to 6 months.
And they can be healed. And I recommend everybody visit your website, which is adrenalfatigue.org, correct?
Right. Uh-huh.
And I think everyone needs to pick up Dr. Wilson's book called Adrenal Fatigue, the 21st Century Stress Syndrome, because that really is the Bible about the role of the adrenals, and as you learned today, it's directly related to our risk of autoimmune disease.
Boy, it is. And if they want another education, all they have to do is go to Medline and type in stress and autoimmunity, and look how many articles pop up about that. Keep your stress down as much as you can. Keep your adrenals and thyroid strong. Eat well. Make sure your intestinal tract is going well, and find a good doctor that can take you the rest of the way.
Well, Dr. Wilson, as always, this has been so enlightening. I want to thank you for the great work you're doing and for sharing your wisdom and creating the time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for having me on and for all the great work you're doing.
Thank you so much. Have a great day. And to all of you listening, have a great, healthy day. Remember, there are answers to every possible health challenge you may be facing. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.